All right, everybody, welcome to Talking Taker, episode number 28 of our encyclopedic exploration, digging up the career of professional wrestling's greatest character of all time. My name is Alex Dorio. I am one half of the Creatures of the Night, and I am joined, as always, by my wrestling buddy, my tag team partner, my friend, Travis White. Travis, we are here, another round of Dead Man Talking, and unfortunately, you're not in the room with me this afternoon, but we're doing the best we can.
That's very true, yeah. This is not another quote-unquote live episode, unfortunately. I couldn't drive to Atlanta this weekend, but we are here. We are, I guess, new recording equipment, so hopefully this sounds better to those of you listening. We'll see how it goes.
That's right. So. We finally splurged for the official Skype call recorder, so if anybody wants to send us any sponsorship money or anything like that to help out with the cost of this, we also just migrated over to Podbean from Podomatic. I don't know why I said it like that.
Automatic for the people.
That's right. Not anymore, though. Podbean.
Nope.
Podbean is the dream, I guess. I don't know. but we're over there now at podbean.com. Our full archives are over there. Hopefully nothing has changed with anybody's subscriptions. I haven't heard any issues. You know, mine seemed to work fine on my iPhone, downloaded just like normal. Didn't have to change anything. So whatever you're listening with, whether it's with your iPhone on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, YouTube, anything like that, hopefully everything is working just fine for you. If not, let us know of any issues you're having downloading the show. I'd be happy to look into it, to see about fixing it. Or if there's a podcast network that we're not on yet that we need to get on, let us know about that. But we appreciate you listening. We appreciate you tuning in every single week, going through this journey with us. About to say going through the sludge of this, because we're about to get into a couple episodes streak here that is kind of rough to get through. But before we jump into that, Travis, I did want to mention a couple things coming off of our last episode. Number one, it's happened a couple weeks ago, but we haven't had a chance to record since then. But if you're a podcast fan, I'm sure you already listened to Bruce Pritchard's Something to Wrestle With podcast and heard his and Conrad Thompson's exploration through 1995 through 1997 of The Undertaker. And of course, you know, we've covered almost 2 years of that fully now, and we'll be covering the next year here in the weeks to come. So we were very interested in listening to it. And Travis, just did anything jump out at you from that Pritchard show? Anything interesting that you learned about? What did you think of their episode?
It was fun. You and I were a little disappointed. I think there weren't any more big stories coming up, you know, about some of these matches we talked about, and Pritchard wouldn't reveal the magic behind the Buried Alive match. We want to know, like, you know, how they got Taker safely away and got his hand, you know, sticking up or whatever. But, you know, it was a good episode. It was a lot more about the WWF at the time, but, It was good. And I do like that as we get to this match, he does call The Undertaker, this is his pirate phase. So Pritchard mentioned that this is Undertaker is a new pirate phase here. So, which his outfit here doesn't last very long. It changes a little sooner than I think he expected. So anyway, but it was a good episode. The best part of the whole thing is when he explained how everything, the storyline between Kane and Undertaker makes complete sense. In a rant that's just epic, and those of you go listen to it, and it's phenomenal. So
yeah, you'll know what we're talking about. It is fun. It's interesting. Definitely, it's like many of their shows. It's not just focused on one thing. They're talking about the business in general. So yeah, you're gonna learn a lot about a lot of stuff. They spent a lot of time talking about old Steve Mongo McMichael on there.
Yeah,
if you were a fan back then, it might be interesting to learn some of that stuff. I did think that, sorry, you're probably hearing my dogs in the background again. I don't know what to do with these fellas, but they make too much noise during the show. Sorry about that. But,
I liked him talking about how, like, Bear and Undertaker weren't comfortable separating, you know, mm-hmm. They really liked each other. They were hesitant to do the separation angle. So, but I'm glad they did. Gave us something to talk about. So,
yeah.
Gave Undertaker's character something to build on and go from. Because honestly, he was kind of a little stale at that point, probably. Fighting the Monster of the Week, you know, or Goldust of Mankind and figuring all that out. So, you know, once they turned Paul Bearer, it definitely gave him a new, like we said, new beginning, a new chapter. And now he's a pirate here at this match. So.
So I was going to say, I did enjoy, it talked about Undertaker's signature dive to the outside that he does. And Bruce Pritchard called it the flying cow spot. So I'd never heard that terminology before. I think we definitely have to use that in the weeks to come. It was interesting to find out that Undertaker suffered an infection coming out of that Boiler Room Brawl match that we covered a few weeks ago. You know, we mentioned he got a cut on his arm there and actually suffered a pretty serious infection. I never knew that from there. And they ended up having to use Bill Watts to come in and replace him on some house shows. So that's pretty crazy. Fill in for there. And then the only other thing was I had to call BS on something he said on there. He talks about the Creatures of the Night. And we talked about them during that feud with Kama. He says that those people, you know, they would just go into the crowd and find people that were Undertaker fans and pay them and use them on camera. And there's just no way that could possibly be true. Maybe once or twice during that thing, but these are clearly actors or performers or other wrestlers or something, especially the ones that take bumps end up doing major stuff on camera. There's no way they just picked random people out of the crowd to do that. No. I don't know what he's talking about with that.
Yeah. That was a little fishy. I was like, he just didn't do his own research, I guess. I remember. He was in Costa Rica before they filmed that, didn't they? Wasn't he in Costa Rica before they recorded that episode?
Probably.
He was chilling.
So overall, good episode. Definitely great supplement to our podcast. Yeah. So you know, you can go back into our archives. You can go all through 95 and 96, and we'll be approaching 1997 here after this week and next week's episode. We're going to dive right into 1997, which is going to be a heck of a year. A lot of the most memorable matches. And I think in our next episode, we might do a little preview of what's to come in 1997. So we'll save that for then. We still got to finish up 1996 first. And one other thing before we dive into this match, Survivor Series 96, just to recap our last episode, we just talked about Buried Alive in Your House, October 1996. A lot of great feedback from everybody on that one. But one thing I totally forgot to mention, and I posted this on our Instagram page, at Talking Taker on Instagram, was one of my favorite toys growing up as a kid was I had the Buried Alive toy set that came out a few months after this. It was the Jack specific WWF toys, and it was a 4-pack with Undertaker, Mankind, Paul Bearer, and the Executioner figure. The exclusive, only way you could get Executioner figure. It came with a little headstone that said RIP on it, and it came with the puniest, tiniest little shovel figure or little accessory.
Like Legos.
It looked like a Lego. It really did. It was like a little garden shovel that came with there.
Spade, if you will.
But I loved that set, man. I used that Mankind. I used all three of those figures and Paul Bearer to a lesser extent. But the three wrestlers, I used them all the time. They were some of my favorite figures that I had. I actually used the Executioner. I made him sort of like a Terry Funk kind of character and had him do all sorts of hardcore matches. I used him for way longer than the character actually ended up being used in the WWF. But I just had to mention that coming out of Buried Alive, one of my favorite memories out of there. And the Undertaker figure in there is actually the Undertaker that we see here at Survivor Series, not the Undertaker from the actual Buried Alive match. So we will talk about that here in a few minutes as we get into Survivor Series 1996. We're talking about Mankind versus The Undertaker in a shark cage match. But, you know, Travis, we're coming off of a historic, memorable, crazy, unique matchup. Buried Alive. Undertaker versus Mankind. It's the feud's been building since WrestleMania. Been building for 6 months. And we see Undertaker get a win there at Buried Alive. And then actually, Undertaker is the one who gets Buried Alive. This huge production, this huge angle goes down. All the heels come out, much like Royal Rumble 1994. Bury the Undertaker. Then the lightning strikes. Undertaker's hand pops out of the grave. I wanted to ask you this. Let's play Fantasy Booker for a second, Travis. I'm going to give you the pencil. I'm going to give you the head of the booking committee at the time. let's say Buried Alive happens, that everything goes just like it did back then. How would you book the next phase of the Undertaker Mankind storyline? How would you lay things out from there if you were in charge? And I know that I'm just throwing this on you. We haven't talked about this, so
we have not. No, this is a curveball.
Yeah.
So I guess to me that was the culmination. Although Mankind does get the one up on Undertaker and he gets buried. So what I would honestly do is I would realize that Terry Bam Bam Gordy is not going to do a daggum thing in that executioner costume. And either the next night or two on Raw, what I would have Undertaker do for the next month is go through all the heels that helped Mankind defeat him at this, or throw him in the grave and shove all dirt. I would have him go through Executioner, Triple H, who else was there? Goldust. Who else was out there?
Bradshaw.
I would have him just rip through all those guys. Yeah, Crush. Oh, good Lord, Crush. Yeah, I'd have him crush all those guys in the next several weeks. And then, honestly, maybe do a cage match. That was maybe Buried Alive should have been the end, but I would go cage match. No interference. Nobody can come in. It's just Undertaker. It's just Mankind. And I would have Undertaker absolutely murder him. And just a short match, build him up. Because of where they're headed in 1997, I would just have him absolutely kill him. He gets him. He finally gets his hand raised as he's the victor. Mankind is over with. And that's the end of the story. That would be me.
Interesting, because that I'm glad I asked you that, because that's not at all what I would have thought. My thinking, and you know, maybe listeners, you can tell us which one of these you like better. We don't normally do this on the show, so my thinking, you've had this huge angle. Undertaker's been buried alive, so it's something crazy, insane. We don't know where he's gone or how he survived it. This happens in October. I would keep Undertaker off TV for at least another 2 months, at least till Royal Rumble, maybe even to WrestleMania. And then I would build up Mankind. Yeah, forget about the Executioner. Just let that peter out, die yeah. out. Forget that. Build up Mankind even stronger. Maybe even give him a short world title reign or something like that. Forget about the Sid world title reign. Maybe give it to Mankind. But have Undertaker sell getting buried alive, this historic thing, for a couple months, just like he sold being put in the casket by Yokozuna for months.
Sure.
And then have him return. You can have him return before Royal Rumble. You can have him return at Royal Rumble. But have him return and have this huge blow off. You could do a cage match, like you said, but make it this big epic deal, just like you made Buried Alive a big epic deal. Make his return this big epic showdown with Mankind one last time, either at Royal Rumble or at WrestleMania, and have him finally lay Mankind to rest, or lay this feud to rest. And then you can take Mankind out for a few months and have him sell that.
That's a great idea, actually. Renigman. Yeah, that's great. Have it go to WrestleMania, because that it started the night after WrestleMania 96, so to have it ultimately you know, cap off the year. But again, there were a lot of things out of control of their hands with lost smiles and things of that nature. So,
for sure.
If you were starting the story and you were the one writing it from without all those things we know in hindsight, that would have been a good story too, man.
It is easy to do it.
Because you're right, Buried Alive doesn't get sold very well.
That's my point. That's what I'm trying to get at here with us going back to fantasy book this, because the actual aftermath of Buried Alive going into Survivor Series is just really, it's nothing. And it's just not at all anything that either of us said. They don't sell this beating at all. Undertaker is kept off TV for the next month after being buried alive, but it's announced either, I don't remember if it's the night after or just the 2 weeks after, but hey, Undertaker and Mankind have already signed on to fight again at Survivor Series in a normal match after they've just had an unsanctioned match where they were trying to kill each other and bury the other person alive. They're just going to go back again and have just an everyday match. Only difference is Paul Bearer is going to be suspended above the ring in the shark cage. It's just such a dud, you know, such a what's the word I'm looking for? Just a letdown from this huge deal that we've made of it to be a Buried Alive. And we end up seeing that in the crowd's response to the actual match, too.
Yeah. Well, it's like the writers took a dirt nap when they came up with this to bring it all back to the Buried Alive match. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, because the crowd is not into this like they should be. Probably because they're probably just like, man, what's the point of having a regular match? After we've seen them do the boiler room, we've seen them bury each other, you know, take a dirt nap, and now we're just watching them wrestle. It's just kind of, it's kind of strange.
It is. Kind of weird. And there's not much build up to it, you know, after we've had all those awesome graveyard videos building into Buried Alive, you know, all that historically memorable stuff. And if you didn't go back and watch all that, I guess it's all up on our Twitter and Facebook and all that good stuff at Talking Taker on all those. So you can go check those videos out. Definitely a must. So coming out of Survivor Series, coming out of Buried Alive, there's nothing on the Raw after Buried Alive. I think they just recap the match a little bit, but we don't hear from Mankind or Undertaker. Instead, we get this 20-minute long Bret Hart promo where he comes back for the first time since WrestleMania. And the next week on Raw, I don't have the episodes written down, but it's 2 weeks after Buried Alive, we get Doc Hendricks doing the Survivor Series Event Center or whatever, and he throws to – he calls it a segment from the Big Bang Boom house show tour. But
oh, this is on November 4th.
Okay, November 4th.
Today, yeah.
It's clearly shot at Monday Night Raw. You can see the Monday Night Raw entranceway in the background. I think they meant it for the Raw the week before, but the Bret Hart promo maybe ran a little bit longer than it was supposed to. But they ended up shooting it. It's Mankind, Paul Bearer, and the Executioner all in the ring cutting their victory promo of the after Buried Alive, when all of a sudden a shark cage gets lowered into the ring with, as you called it, an effigy of Paul Bearer hung upside down in the cage. The lights flicker, I think. We hear Undertaker's voice saying something in there, and it's supposed to intimidate and scare Paul Bearer. That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Creatures of the night. The reports of my demise were greatly exaggerated. Paul Bearer, I thought I would take this time to preview to you your future at Survivor Series, Paul Bearer. This is what I have in store for you.
By the way, to bring us all back to Talking Taker, doesn't that effigy look like my old wrestling dummy, my aunt, maybe?
It does.
it does look a little bit like it.
It's not the same quality as the
no.
effigy of Diesel that was in the casket back at WrestleMania 96. Right. It just looks like he's got a piece of cloth with a pillow with some Sharpie drawn on it for Paul Bearer's face.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not done well, honestly. But yeah, there's PA system. Undertaker comes in, it's like, yeah, the rumors of my demise were greatly exaggerated. That's about it. And they're all supposed to act terrified in the ring of this. And I don't know. It's kind of a letdown, like you said. So, yeah, weird. And then the next week on Raw basically is the same thing, right?
Right. They do the same angle over again. I think Mankind now
beat Freddie Joe Floyd.
Yes, he did have a match.
November 11th. He beats old good old FJF.
Yeah, one of his greatest rivals, Freddie Joe Floyd. They have a match, and they do the same thing. They have a promo in the ring. The shark cage gets lowered down. Undertaker's voice comes over the PA system and says something mysterious again. And that's it, man.
Yeah.
That's all we're getting.
I'm going to defeat Mankind and finally get my hands on Paul Bearer. So, but that's all the buildup. You know what? It's probably just they redubbed like him talking over the same exact scenes, what it looks like to me.
Yeah.
So... yeah, it's not anything new. So.
No. The selling point, I guess, is supposed to be Undertaker getting his hands on Paul Bearer this time.
Right.
Not Mankind. He's already gotten a victory over Mankind, I suppose. So now it's about trying to beat Mankind so that he can get his hands on Paul Bearer and get that revenge. Yeah. But still, it's just so half-baked compared to what we've been getting all the months before. And it's a disappointment, and that leads in to Survivor Series itself. Survivor Series 1996 taking place this year at Madison Square Garden. And always love seeing Madison Square Garden, seeing shows from there, especially from that era where they have the entryway.
The old entrance ramp? Yeah.
Oh, man, I love that.
I love that, man. It's so good. We'll have a little bit of Undertaker personal experience in Madison Square Garden coming up here in a few years. So I'm excited to talk about that. It's a wonderful place. Yeah. But yeah, man, MSG is awesome. I forgot that's where this was until you and I actually did watch this match together when I was at your house.
We
but
did.
We didn't take notes or do this, record this podcast or anything. So we had to watch it again separately. And I just forgot that this was at the MSG until we watched it. So good. But this match is the second on the card. So I have my thoughts about that, and that's because we'll talk about Undertaker's entrance in a second. But I think that's why it's second on the card, honestly, because of the entrance that he's about to have. Before the actual match, Kevin Kelly, again, the voice of Ring of Honor, interviews Mankind and Paul Bearer in the, what are they called, the bowels of the arena?
Bowels, yeah.
Yeah, and Bearer's just like, I'm not going in a cage, I'm not an animal, because I'm Paul Bearer, and you're not.
It's a new catchphrase, like, man.
Yeah, I love that catchphrase. I don't think it caught on. It's not like stupid idiot or... you know, Austin 316 or the lead SmackDown, but I'm Paul Bearer and you're not. That's awesome, but yeah, that's all the build up on the actual pay per view to it too. No, I don't believe there's a video package or anything.
No, that's just all that I can promo in the back. I don't get why it's the second on the card. I don't understand it.
Yeah, well, like I said, I think it's because of this entrance we're about to talk about, because Mankind and Paul Bearer come out with the urn first, and commentary says, I believe we'll see an Undertaker like we've never seen before. I don't remember who that was that said that, but we've kind of been saying that a lot recently.
Yeah, he's every other side of the Undertaker.
Yeah, since the Bret Hart match at Royal Rumble, it's been a new side of him. You know, he's showing more aggression, he's showing, he's changing up his, well, he's going to change his look up for real here, but they keep talking about how he's more, you know, a wrestler and stuff, so, but anyway, Paul Bearer's in the ring. He refuses to get in a cage. Like you said, he's not an animal. He's Paul Bearer, and the ref's not. The ref should respect that.
I think Vince McMahon says they're going to need a whale cage instead of a shark cage to get Paul Bearer in there. Just
yikes. Oh, man. That wasn't Lawler that said it? It was Vince?
I think
that's
it was
brutal.
Vince. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think you're right.
And it is Vince, Jerry Lawler. It's Vince and Jim Ross on commentary, because Jerry Lawler has a match later on in the show. So just Vince and JR on commentary here.
Alright, so yeah, Paul Bearer, he's selling how afraid he is when the music hits and the lights go out and everything. So again, we talked about how he's kind of rejuvenated since he's getting kind of stale as a face manager, and he's kind of rejuvenated and living it up here. So that was good. But yeah, he refuses to get in the ring before, or in the shark cage, whale cage, before Undertaker comes out. But now he's ready to get in there because he's afraid. But at this point, we get a spotlight following the Undertaker down from above the arena, and he's got bat wings. he's got these giant bat wings. And you know what it reminded me of is the very first time in the Tim Burton Batman, when you see Batman come down, and he's got the wings out. Like, it reminded me of that, but that movie came out in 89. It was 7 years before this. So
yeah.
I don't think it had anything to do with that. I'm trying to marry, you know, two of my loves, Batman and wrestling together, but it's not working anytime I can. But it's very strange because he's a bat. It's weird. It's cool looking.
Yeah, you know, we don't really know what Undertaker is. Is he a zombie?
Right.
Is he some sort of superhero? What is he, a vampire? Because he's the bat now, and he sleeps in his coffin before. Like, he's
it's true.
Anything undead or spooky or horror villain like at the moment, you know, you can apply to the Undertaker. But that's a great point. I don't know if this had anything to do with it or not. But, you know, it's around this time, just a couple months before, that we first started seeing the Crow version of Sting as well in late 1996. So I'm not trying to call WWF copycats. I don't know if that had anything to do with their thinking. But The Undertaker and Sting kind of hold very similar positions in their company, right? In their respective companies. They are the cornerstones of their companies, very similar characters in a lot of ways. You know, obviously Sting very different than The Undertaker, but they're kind of the moral compass of both of their companies. They're the icons of their respective companies. So I don't know if that was maybe sort of the thinking to go in this darker, different version with The Undertaker, but he's totally different looking as well. We see his hair pulled back and kind of braided a bit. He's wearing his, you called it Biker Taker. I call it Leather Daddy Undertaker. I mean, just like full tight leather outfit. No more gloves. No more of the bootstraps or whatever they were. No robe.
He's got
no hat.
No, yeah. Leather pants, leather vest, elbow pads now, too. Got elbow pads.
That's different.
He's got the half ponytail, like you said. He's got the dyed black hair and really, really high leather boots. Like,
yes.
Like the lead singer Garbage used to wear back in the 90s.
Shirley
Manson? Spice Girls. The Spice Girls. Yeah. For those of you, about 96, maybe he got, maybe he was inspired,
maybe he was inspired by that. Girls.
But he's got this teardrop tattoo thing. It's not a real tattoo, obviously, we know, but he's got this teardrop underneath his right eye, which I'm not from the streets, but I believe that means you've killed someone, right? I mean,
right.
You get a tattoo in jail of a so I wonder if it's like the old Undertaker's dead, here's a new, I don't know, like, is he could tattoo it himself because he's died, he was buried alive, who knows? They didn't expand upon that in the Bruce Pritchard interview, really, or the podcast, really, so I wish they had.
No, Bruce Pritchard just said he hated it. And I think that makes sense, you know, because in one of those promos before Buried Alive, Undertaker says, you know, even if I have to destroy the Undertaker to destroy mankind, I will. So I guess symbolically, this version of Undertaker that we've seen for the past 6 years with the big gloves and the colors and all that, that's been destroyed. And now we have the darker, more serious Undertaker. So maybe that's what the teardrop tattoo is. At one point in the match,
I'm trying to make sense out of it.
Well, Jim Ross mentions it, that he's got this marking on his face, and Vince McMahon is like, yes, both these men have just been beaten up. They've got all sorts of markings all over them. Like, he totally no sells.
Undertaker's got some sort of unusual marking under his right eye. I can't quite make out from where we're sitting.
I would suggest that both individuals have got markings all over their physique as a result of this match, and they didn't have coming into it. Highly physical matchup.
Whatever it is, I don't know if he hadn't noticed it or doesn't know what it's supposed to be, but I just thought that was funny.
Oh yeah, that's funny. But anyway, yeah, he looks different. Pritchard calls it the Pirate Taker. It definitely does look kind of swashbuckly. You can see him almost like the Princess Bride. If he had a little mask on like Zorro, it'd be like a Princess Bride. So anyway, but totally different look here. Again, we're talking about how his phases are changing and stuff, but this is a brand new phase. I feel like we keep saying that in 1996, but
not just looking different, he wrestles totally different too coming out of the gate.
Yeah, and I want to say too, this is really cool psychology going back to Paul Bearer. Like we mentioned again, he's doesn't want to get in the cage, but then once Undertaker comes down like a bat out of heaven, walking with the angels, he comes down. Paul Bearer immediately jumps in the cage. He wants to get away from the Undertaker at this point. So I just thought that was some cool psychology.
Yeah, that's
there.
A good point.
And we do have a cage cam.
We have a cage cam. Yeah. We've had the corner cam, coffin cam, grave cam, and now we've got cage cam.
Who knew that Undertaker was the initiator of all kinds of different camera angles?
Yeah.
I wonder if he's responsible for the XFL cameras too. So.
Oh, maybe.
That they use in the NFL now. So anyway, but JR does emphasize, he's in all black leather tonight. So, thanks, JR. What does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. So.
It means something to JR.
Yeah, but you and I both mentioned, man, the crowd is sitting on their hands. Like, you think they'd go bananas when this phenom comes down from the ceiling, which, again, they would later once Sting is doing this stuff in WCW. The crowd goes nuts when they see this type of stuff. But here, this MSG crowd, man, they're just sitting on their hands. Like, it's not cool to them. I don't know if it's because they're the hardcore fans or if it's just like you said, there's not a lot of build-up. We thought Buried Alive was kind of the exclamation point, or expected something larger than this, but I don't know. It's definitely weird. So
it is, and I don't typically think of Madison Square Garden as being a quiet crowd. They're usually pretty lively and pretty into things. And
yeah,
again, maybe it's the placement of the match on the show. Who knows? But sure. Yeah, that's going to be a story. Yeah. Story kind of the whole match is the crowd really struggling to get into it, and Undertaker and Mankind struggling to bring the crowd into it. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I want to talk about the actual wrestling.
Yeah, well, into the match. I alluded to it a second ago, but Undertaker comes in working a totally different style here.
Yeah.
He comes in right out of the gate, hits a little leg sweep, goes into an arm bar, and he has apparently gone to wrestling school in the past month since the Buried Alive match. That's what he's been doing.
Yeah, man, he's been doing training with Boss Rutten or somebody who's big in MMA at this point. I can't think of Tank Abbott training with somebody like that. Maybe Ken Shamrock. Oh, I could have gone with him. So, yeah, maybe he was training in the Lions Den with Ken Shamrock for the last month. So who knows? But yeah, he's got his wrestling boots on, man.
He does.
That's what his big go-go boots are. But yeah, he hits a drop toe hold. And I remember JR was like, well, that's a debut for that move. I've never seen Undertaker do that move before. So again, we've seen him do the schoolboy and the roll up and the that weird backseat driver thing he did in the Buried Alive match, and then now he's adding drop toe holds and arm bars and all kind of stuff. So yeah. And he does a fireman carry, and he starts working, he works a body part.
He does.
Which he starts working on the right arm Mankind. Again, which that plays into the mandible claw thing, but to see him not just beating it, but actually working it like with wrestling moves is a new little nuance there. So yeah, he went to wrestling school, man. Wrestling school.
Yeah, it's funny.
Dressed like a pirate, wrestling school.
I keep thinking back to the WrestleMania 8 where Undertaker fought Jake Roberts, and it's like a, you know, I don't even know if it's 5 minutes or not, but I think we made a point that they maybe do five moves in that entire match. And it's a, you know, it's a really well done match, but that was kind of the Undertaker back then. You know, he didn't do a lot, and he didn't have to. And we've slowly seen over the past few years his character evolve and his wrestling ability evolve too. He wants to show off. He wants to perform. He wants to evolve and not be stagnant. He wants to fit in with the Bret Harts and the Shawn Michaels that are taking over the WWF right now. He wants to fit in and be on that level to be able to compete with them. So it's really cool to see that evolution. But it does take the crowd aback quite a bit. He's not working that strong Undertaker style that we're so used to.
Yeah, it's different. That's probably just this whole new thing. It's new for the audience to take in. Everything's new here. But yeah, going back to just like getting into a little bit of play-by-play here, he's slamming the hand on the stairs and the guardrail, and he's actually using the tag rope to tie it around the mandible claw to the hand, which is kind of neat, you know?
Yeah.
You didn't see the tag rope being utilized very much back then for those types of things, so that was neat. But Vince makes a cool callback. He talks about how Shawn Michaels did the same type of stuff in their Mind Games match, so good on Vince for having a memory there, because he tends to have short-term memory loss. So good on him. So nice callback.
Yeah, I like that too. Like you say, he works over the hand a lot, trying to eliminate the mandible claw. And he bites Mankind's hand at one point. So really smart psychology there from Undertaker.
Yeah,
they do some more fighting on the outside into the crowd.
Take it to the streets, they said.
That's right.
Take it to the streets.
Streets of New York.
All I can think of. Yeah. Taking it to the streets. Yeah. Then he gives Undertaker gives Mankind a huge back body drop over the guardrail.
Yeah.
And onto the floor.
Yeah.
And oh man, like, this guy just did not protect his body. Man, no. He went all out. Oh, again, kudos to Mick Foley for all of this, just giving it. I just wrote, ouch. That just hurt, man.
Well,
it hurt
a couple times in there, he did the spot where Mankind is on the apron and Undertaker standing on the outside, and he runs, and Johnny Gargano does it a lot now. He just does it like a senton, diving on Undertaker. I believe he hit him the first time, and the second time
he does,
he just goes into the empty pool, basically, and lands back first onto the mats, doing a flip, and just, oh my goodness, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how he got up from that.
I have no idea. No clue, man. Yeah, he does that running flip off the apron and actually hits Taker this first time. And then I just wrote, there's three children chanting rest in peace. That's about it. Yeah, three little kids like, rest in peace, rest. And it's just, the crowd actually boos Mankind when he's in control, though, which is good. So, Taker comes back in control a little bit. It's weird, you talk about when Undertaker bites his hand, Mankind's like balancing on the middle rope. It's really strange. Like, it's a strange visual. I'm not sure what happened there, but he's balancing on the middle rope. But there's a really cool exchange here too, where Mankind reverses an Irish whip into just an immediate wedgie pile driver.
He's
getting an Irish whip, turns it around immediately, and he just kicks him, boom, wedgie pile driver. It's like a almost like a snap suplex. It was so quick. Like, you don't normally see that with a pile driver. That's one of the cool things about that style of pile driver, is he can do it out of nowhere almost. And then Paul Bearer at this point is hamming it up from the cage. He's oh yeah! He's doing what, you know, Chris Jericho did last year to Kevin Owens, or what Enzo did. Well, can we say his name? What he did to Cass or whatever. You know, there's it's good. That I don't know.
He's trying to get the crowd into it.
Yeah, he's trying.
I think that's the story of this match. That's why we keep talking about it. The crowd is dead, and the match itself suffers from it. I don't know which is causing which, if the match is bad and the crowd is reacting to it, or the crowd is bad and the match is suffering from it, right, throwing them off their game. It's hard for me to tell that, but the whole package just suffers. And it's we've seen so many cards now where the rest of the card sucks and the crowd sucks throughout, but when Undertaker comes out, the crowd comes alive and they're into everything that Undertaker is doing. And this crowd is the complete opposite of that. This is probably the first time we've ever seen a crowd just totally dead for an Undertaker match. And the match itself suffers from it, I guess. That's why we're not talking much about it. It's kind of disjointed and all over the place.
Yeah. I do want to mention something funny here, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we're not going to go too much play-by-play here, but there's one part where Undertaker goes for a tombstone and Mankind reverses it into a mandible claw, which is kind of cool. But to break the mandible claw, Undertaker just hurls Mankind through the ropes.
Yeah.
Like, just whips him, and he just takes this full body, like, bump through the ropes straight to the floor. No bumping on the apron or anything. But and Undertaker started using the steps outside and basically beating up his arm. And JR just confirmed what we were all wondering.
Mankind's not wearing a helmet. His skull struck the steel. He may have a concussion in addition to a broken hand. Who knows?
What is he talking about? Like, we can see that he's not wearing a helmet, JR. He's like, Mankind's not wearing a helmet. Like, we know that, dude. Like, I don't know. It was weird.
Well, you know, people didn't have HD TVs back then. He does have some headgear on, so maybe they thought that was like a protective helmet.
I don't know. But and then JR does say vintage Undertaker here when Undertaker goes for old school. So
he says
vintage Undertaker here. Yeah, so it's been 6 years he's been doing this move, I guess, and at this point it's now graduated to vintage. Yeah, there you go. That's what it takes, 6 years.
We harp on Michael Cole for overusing that line, but you know, he got it from JR, apparently.
Exactly. Learn from the best.
So. Mankind ends up pulling that little weapon out of his pants that looks like a popsicle stick or whatever it is that he tends to use over and over again. A very Memphis-style weapon, like Jerry Lawler used to always do. He ends up trying to hit Undertaker with that, and the finish is so weird.
Right before that, Undertaker hits a vertical suplex. An actual suplex. And JR's like, oh, he's wrestling tonight.
He is.
And then, there's the popsicle stick spot right after that. So,
For the finish, they just kind of end up in the corner doing something. I'm not sure if the finish got botched or they just decided to go home early. It's really weird.
Yeah. Is the ref blind, too? Because it's not an ODQ match, right?
The ref is not staring
at him, stabbing him with his popsicle stick.
Doesn't care,
right? I mean, is he blind? I don't know, but yeah, take the ending here, because it's, I don't know what happened here. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if Taker just told Mankind go home.
Yeah,
like,
well,
honestly,
Mankind's kind of beating on him in the corner, and Undertaker just picks Mankind up out of the corner, hurls him up on his shoulders, hits the tombstone, 1, 2, 3, and that's it. Just out of nowhere, no big pop from the crowd. No big build-up into it. The match just kind of ends. I think they definitely called an audible there, went home early or something, went straight to the finish.
And we have no insider knowledge of that or anything. We just speculate, but it seemed like it, because it was just kind of random. Yeah, it just kind of came out of nowhere, especially after all these months of them brutalizing each other and all the, you know. But it does protect the finisher. You know, no one's kicked out of the tombstone at this point, I don't believe, right? So that is still protected.
I don't think Mankind ever did.
No, I don't think so. But the crowd, I mean, if we're wrong. Yeah, sure. There's a small pop. Again, those three kids that were chanting "Rest in Peace," I think earlier they pop, but there's nothing like it should be at Madison Square Garden for Undertaker. Exactly. You know, the bat taker here, pirate bat. I don't even know what to call him, man. He's strange.
leather taker.
At this point, so now at this point, we're gonna get the cage lowered, right? Because that's the whole point. You got to get through.
Exactly.
Undertaker's or Mankind's the mini boss. You know, and you gotta beat the little Koopa, and you gotta get to Bowser at the end, right?
Sure.
So, Mario references from '96. So now the shark cage is gonna get lowered, and JR says, "So it's a good thing he's wearing black pants." Talking about ball hair. So JR's kind of got some good ones tonight, and this. So, but of course, before Undertaker is allowed to get his hands on Paul Bearer, old Terry Bam Bam Gordy in his horrible outfit comes out and stops him. So
the executioner allows Paul Bearer to escape, and Paul Bearer, Mankind, executioner all run out to safety.
Yeah.
Undertaker doesn't get his revenge, but he does get to celebrate in the ring, do the Shakespeare pose, some purple lights flicker on and off. So he gets a bit of a celebration, but still not fully satisfied. And
no.
The feud sort of comes to an end. We're going to limp to the finish line again next month. But I get sort of a huge dud after last month's big production.
Yeah. Did you notice, too, that do you believe that Terry Gordy was drinking the same thing King Kong Bundy was when he interacted with Undertaker? Because at this point, when he does interfere here at the end and, you know, not allow Undertaker to get his hands on Paul Bearer, basically, if he comes in and tries to interfere and they kind of Irish whip each other, Undertaker gets a dive and run and clothesline on the executioner, who then immediately rolls out of the ring.
Yeah.
He doesn't lay on the ground for it. He rolls out of the ring, stands up, and walks to the back. I was just like, what? Like, it reminded me so much of King Kong Bundy. So, but again, on that Pritchard podcast that he had recently, he talked about how they just, you know, what does he say? The bloom was off the rose as far as Terry Gordy. He just wasn't. He's a shell of himself.
We can see that.
It's sad to see.
It is.
But we'll talk more about him in our next episode, too, though. So
we will. We'll talk about that next week on the show, next Friday. We'll cover In Your House, It's Time from December 1996 as The Undertaker takes on Executioner in an Armageddon Rules match. And
I can't wait to explain that.
Oh, we have quite a bit to say about that, I'm sure. We'd love for you to go watch that match. Watch along with us. So you'll have all the thoughts along with us. You can share in our conversation here. We'd love to hear your thoughts about that going into it. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this match on all our social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Talking Taker. We want to hear from you on all our podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, YouTube, and Podbean. Now, you can follow us on any and all of those. We'd love to for you to subscribe on one of those. If you are a subscriber, then you'll get the episode a little bit early on Thursday night before I post it on social media. And we'd love for you to give us a rating. That'll help us out, help us to get into more ears. We want more people to join us on this journey through the Undertaker. Undertaker's career. We post polls on the Twitter page every week about the match. We haven't been able to record the past couple weeks, so I haven't shared those. But for the Boiler Room Brawl match, a little surprised by this one. Only 50% gave it a thumbs up. 33% gave it thumbs down. 17% thumbs in the middle. I was kind of surprised by that.
Yeah, me too. That made any sense to me. Well, no. That was good. So.
Oh, yeah, I loved it. And then the final curtain match from a couple weeks ago.
I can't stop laughing.
Well, that one got 50% thumbs up, and then 25% thumbs in the middle, 25% thumbs down. I guess you guys have different opinions from us, but that's what makes this so fun and exciting.
Because we pretty much didn't agree, it seems like. But, listeners are a little bit different. That's fine. I do want to say, you know, this match is not something to go. I watch it to see the bat the Batman version of Undertaker come down. But also, there's a young guy who makes his debut on the show and go on to become somebody quite important in wrestling and just in pop culture. And his name is Rocky Maivia. And also a phenomenal Stone Cold vs. Bret Hart match. Super great match. So yeah, we do want to put those two things over that also happened on this show. So Madison Square Garden, they enjoyed those. Well, they enjoyed the Stone Cold match. I don't know if they enjoyed Pineapple Rocky coming out, Pineapple Head. But again, he did well for himself.
He did. It worked out all right. And yeah, for sure, go out of your way to watch the Stone Cold Bret Hart match if you've never seen that.
Yeah.
That's one of the best WWF matches of all time. And that's what to watch this pay-per-view for, not so much this match.
Yeah. So anyway, if you were there, if you were at MSG this night, tell us why you were so quiet. Is it because it was a second match or because you just didn't care anymore? So let us know. And other than that, take her easy.